Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another episode of F Off the Press. We've got a guest in studio tonight by the name of AB Basson. And then we've got the King of the North, Nick Stothart, who's got a coach at Newcastle. But that's not what we're talking about tonight. How are you guys doing? Welcome, AB.
Thanks for having me, guys.
How are you doing?
Yeah, I can't complain. Busy week, getting nice and warm. Football season's heating up. And yeah, obviously a bit disappointed with Bafana. But what can we do? Maybe there's a replay on the cards.
No. Yeah, we'll get into that. Nick, how are you doing?
Yeah, good, man. Sorry I'm late. Just had to rush from Pretoria to Joburg for this. I had a session now. So yeah, but excited to speak to AB. AB, me and you have chatted a few times. I actually saw you recently at the Amatux Cape Town Spurs game. It was good to see you. Fortunately for us, we got the victory, and the shirt you were wearing, you needed to burn it and throw it away. So I was tough for that. AB, you're a Tux alumni, aren't you?
Yeah, so I started at Tux. I was telling the guys just before we started. I actually did journalism at Tux. I actually started my career there at Parramatta Bay newspaper. I believe it's called something else now, but when I was there, my Tux was all flying high under Steve Barker. Yeah. Vungani Zungu was there. He still got lifts to training with Mama Niang back then. Didn't have one tattoo. Now he's like covered in tattoos. Aubrey Ngoma was still there. Yeah, obviously Steve Barker's gone on to achieve great things now at Stellenbosch. Yeah, great to see him down there. But yeah, it all started for me at Tux, and you guys are doing well this season in the Great Africa Championship, so that's great to see.
Yeah, that's it.
No, that's good. So from just to continue on that, so from that journey, where else did you go? Just so we can at least those who don't know who AB Basson is, after working at the University of Pretoria in terms of the newspaper, what did you do there on?
Yeah, so my journey, I've got a huge, I have to say thank you to Melissa Reddy. You guys will probably know we're now covering Liverpool quite extensively in the Premier League. I actually got in contact with her in my final year of varsity, looking for a job. She was editor of Kickoff back then, and she said, look, I've got a friend called Neil Craig, and he's editor at Backpage Media, and you know they're looking for someone that can cover the game based in Pretoria. So the start of the line for me, I started at Backpage Media straight out of varsity. I was with them first on my first stint for, I think, 5 years. Moved down to Cape Town towards the end. Did some work for them back then, and then went on to work for IX Cape Town as media officer and social media manager. So that's where I got into the social media side of things. And yeah, I was in Cape Town for 2 years, went on to work for Sokla Duma, took things over there when Rossella was head of social media at the time. She moved on to Italy, took over from her. And yeah, I was offered to go back to Backpage start of last year. And yeah, I've been back in Joburg for just over two, 3 years now. So yeah, I've been moving up and down, but all good.
It's been quite a journey for you, AB. But I mean, you worked for Kickoff, you've worked for La Duma. Is it quite competitive in that market, in that space? Obviously, you're working for one of them now, if I'm not mistaken, if I heard you correctly. But would you say one is better than the other? Do they maybe cover different, angles in the industry?
I actually also worked for Goal.com, freelanced for six months. When Sundowns won the Champions League, I was actually overseeing Sundowns' journey. So that was really cool. But yeah, like I said, my journalism has shifted quite a bit. So I started off writing quite a bit, and then I shifted towards social media. And these days, I'm not just involved in football. I do a bit of cricket. We actually have a contract with Lions Cricket, so we do all their social media stuff. So yeah, it's not just football for me anymore, which is quite nice. You know, you see different side of things. But just get back to your question. I think these days, Sokla Duma and Kickoff, you know, they in the end of the day, they merge and they all fall under the same umbrella now and then Media 24. They still try and do their own thing. You know, Kickoff is more the magazine side and Soccer Duma is the weekly newspaper. So, yeah, they try and do their own thing, but it's such a competitive market. You know, you're trying to push out stories every hour. It's very difficult to get exclusives. That's where you need your top journalists. And, you know, Soccer Duma lost some really good people over the past few years and Kickoff as well. And that's never easy to replace. And I think in the market, it's just changing constantly. You just need to adapt or die, basically.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. I think, you know, as you're saying, it's quite competitive. And I've seen a lot of independent guys coming up, you know, eDisky Times coming up, your Far Post coming up as well. But just in terms of you saying now that you're busy also with the cricket side, is there any difference that you've seen working with the different sports that maybe one sport can learn from the other? Because I'll be honest, when I look at Bafana Bafana's social media and I compare it to Cricket South Africa and I compare it to the Springboks, those other two sports are doing much better in terms of social media aspects.
There just seems to be a lot more emphasis on the right things, I think, right now. I'm not necessarily saying social media is the right thing, but it is a tool to get to the masses. And yet, of the day, if you look mediocre on paper, you know, maybe it shifts over to the team. Who knows? But I think I was actually quite surprised of cricket with the level of investment there is. You know, you look at the sponsors. Okay, the pool is much smaller because you only have a certain amount of franchises. But I look at the investments. I look at Lions Cricket's list of sponsors. They probably have between 20 and 50 sponsors ranging, you know, from different sizes. And then you go over to a top division PSL club and they battle to get sponsors. I mean, even the top teams. So that's, you know, the level of investments obviously is a lot different when, you know, in football, you almost have a sole person that's in charge of bringing in funds to the club, where in cricket, it's a board and, you know, there's a lot more avenues, revenue avenues. So I think maybe the system is just a bit flawed, but that's just how football is set up around the world, actually. So I think there's a lot of things both parties can learn from each other. I think, you know, the football side of things also is something that cricket can learn from. But looking just at social media, obviously, Bafana don't cover themselves in a lot of glory. But that said, they have improved slightly in the last.
slightly.
I have to give them some credit.
when they release their team sheet, you know, starting lineup, you just see it's a list. You know what I mean? You can't take out the list. You need to see. There seems to be graphics. You know, you literally just pay a graphic designer. There's unemployment in South Africa. Pay the person whatever they need to get paid, so they can just do something for you that's actually on par with other. You know, you look at the PSL clubs. The PSL clubs actually do this, but the Bafana Bafana can't even do it properly. But yeah, that's that. Touching on Bafana Bafana, I know, I think right now would have been a different mood on this show if things had turned out differently on Sunday in Ghana. AB, what are your initial views of what happened on Sunday?
It's funny because, you know, we went into this qualifying campaign, I think, with very low expectations. You look at the squad, you know, Hugo Bruce came in. Obviously, we had immediate success in the Kusafa Cup. You know, the level of that competition can be debated. But, you know, we still won the competition, which is, you know, we've struggled to do over the years, quite strangely enough. Then you go into the qualifying campaign and he brings about a lot of change. You know, he brings out a fresh squad, fresh team, a lot of young players and experienced players at the highest level. And you think, yeah, this is just going to be a training session for the guys, building experience for future years. But then we actually end up doing quite well. And, you know, we build expectations and then only to hurt us in the end. And obviously the way that things happened in Ghana isn't great. And I see now FIFA have acknowledged that there's a complaint from SAFA. So that might transpire into something. Who knows? Might have to go back to Ghana and replay that game, considering what happened with the Senegal game a few years back now. president was sent back then, which could come now and play into our favor. But, you know, in all, I think it was a really good qualifying campaign. You know, just the way that we exited, it's really heartbreaking, especially because, you know, what is in it? A goal or two. And we played really well. Yes, our chances in the playoffs would have been minute, considering we would have not been seeded and we would have probably had like Algeria or Morocco or in Egypt. But we've shown over the years that we can step up when the going gets tough and against the big teams. And Hugo Broos has, I mean, he won the African Cup of Nations of a Cameroon side that I think Joel Matip refused to play in that tournament, and a lot of their big guns pulled out last minute.
Yep.
So he's shown that he can achieve with a young and inexperienced squad, and hopefully we can just build on this qualifying campaign.
No, definitely. I think it is something that we can say we are proud of the boys. I think that's one of the most important things. You know, we're in a group where all the other city teams qualified for the AFCON that's coming up in January, whereas we didn't qualify for AFCON. So for us just to take it to the last game, I felt it was amazing. But yeah, the refereeing performance, I think in itself, there's a lot to be left to question. You know, especially leading up to the actual penalty incident, that shouldn't have even been a corner. It wasn't supposed to be a corner kick. You know, that's the first part. You know, and then secondly, obviously, the dubious penalty that they received. And I'm glad that obviously that Safa has obviously complained. It is right. You know, Nick, what are your views on the situation or the game in itself and the qualification?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think we've spoken about Bafana for the last couple of months now, and I was pleasantly surprised that, you know, he's really turned this around. You know, I didn't really know who Hugo Broos was, and you know, he's been brave in the sense that he hasn't gone to the normal culprits per se, if you want to call it that, calling up the likes of sort of players that haven't been called up in the past, you know, going with youth, going with players that are performing at their clubs. And, you know, it's risky, especially with the players that he has left behind. You know, a lot of people say, why don't you just take the whole of Sundowns to your sort of qualifiers, because they are a really good team. But, you know, in general, it has worked. And I was very confident when I saw that result. I think it was Ethiopia and Ghana when they drew.
1-1, yeah.
I was very confident, but we needed to do the job against Zimbabwe. The first job was obviously to get the 3 points, but to not kill that game off. I just had a sneaky suspicion to go and avoid a 1-0 defeat in Ghana is not easy. And if I'm honest with you, Cello, I think we had a bit of a debate or a chat about it. I thought Bafana were completely outplayed that whole game, regardless of the referees. You know, Ghana could have scored 3 or 4 in that second half.
Yeah.
Yes, it is sore, but from a footballing perspective, I think that true quality of Ghana actually came out. And I think on our night, we could have been lucky and, you know, got the 0-0 draw, with probably a period of improvement needing to be taken place, with a year to go for the World Cup. But I do think, we didn't play our best. I think we've played better in this qualifying campaign, and it looked like it was a little bit negative. I don't think I would have started Ethan Brooks, especially against the size of those midfielders, and the size of those players. Yes, Ethan Brooks is a quality player, but I would go with probably players that are more suited to dealing with those physical encounters. You saw sort of Keegan Dolly come on, and he showed his class. I think he strung one or two passes through, and, you know, created one or two opportunities for us to get into the final third. Yes, Keegan Dolly isn't the biggest player, but he's played in Europe. He's played against those African players in the French league. So I think he's more acclimatized to that. But, you know, who am I to judge a coach who's won the AFCON? You know, he knows best, and he decided to go that way. And if he got a 0-0 draw, we would be praising him. But just from a specific football point of view, I don't think we played as well as we have done in the last couple of games. And that was a little bit disappointing, but I can understand the players going into that game very nervous. You know, you've got the whole nation on your, you know, nation's hopes on your shoulders. And you need to go get a 0-0 draw. And that is very, or a 1-1 draw, whatever it is. It is a very dangerous, sort of plank to walk. And unfortunately, you know, it didn't work out for us. And I'd love for us to get the replay. And I think Hugo Bruce would have learned from his mistakes and probably would change it up. But I just don't have a feel. I don't have that sort of feeling that they're going to support us in this. I think previously with Senegal, there was proof that they were maybe you'll sort of correct me if I'm wrong, but there was unusual betting trends for that specific game. So there was concrete evidence in that stated that referee had acted, you know, in a way that he shouldn't have. I don't know if they can provide that evidence. I'd love to think we could. But yeah, I think we'll have to wait and see. But I think the future is looking good for Bafana. It's just unfortunate because we're not going to be at the next AFCON, not going to be at the next World Cup. So we're going to have to wait quite a while.
AB, so do you recall with that incident with the Senegal Bafana game that was played in South Africa where we beat them 2-1? Do you recall what the reasons were for the replay? Because I think it was a similar situation where it was a World Cup qualifier, and then that qualifier was replayed a year later. Do you remember what the circumstances were?
Yes, if I remember correctly, I mean, I hope I'll get everything correct, but yeah, we beat them 2-1. We received a penalty in that game. I remember it quite vividly. The guy had a bandage on his hand, and you know, if you look quickly, it looked like the ball had hit his hand, but actually the ball had hit his knee, and the referee gave us a penalty. Long story short, we went on to win the game 2-1. It came out later that some or other, like Nick alluded to, some betting trends, it wasn't bribes, because neither Senegal or South Africa were indicted in it, so neither team had any clue what was going on. So that's where it's a bit of a grey area, because, you know, now South Africa are getting punished for something they had no control over.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, if the referee is looking after his own interests, then you know, it has to have an implication on the game. So then the result was exactly the same statement.
We can hear you now. We just lost you a bit there. You were saying the same stadium.
Yeah. So the first result, the 2-1, got annulled, and then they played a year later. And actually, going into that game, so we played Senegal at home, and then 3 days later we'd play them in Dakar. If we had won both games, we would have actually qualified directly for the World Cup. So we're still in the running going into the last two games, but so were the other two teams in the group. I think Cape Verde and Burkina Faso. But obviously we ended up losing 2-0. Sadio Mane had a great game. I think he was involved in both goals. Mm. And yeah, we actually went on to lose the game in Dakar as well. So it didn't really matter. And I think we ended the bottom of the group. But you just think that if that result stood and we'd won our first game or our second game, because we actually drew first in Burkina Faso, we'd have had 4 points from our first two games, and we would have been well on our way to the World Cup in Russia. So, I mean, that's the implications that very small decisions can have on these World Cup qualifiers. And that's, you know, at the end of the day, it all comes down to how serious do FIFA want to take these qualifiers? Why isn't VAR implemented at qualifying stage?
I wanted to bring that in, yeah.
Mm.
Because, you know, at the end of the day, to get to the World Cup, you need to qualify for World Cup. So big decisions are going to get made on the way. So it's just a pity that we get knocked out in this way. But I mean, that's just the way football is. I mean, it's happened in Europe. I mean, everyone remembers Thierry Henry's
and Ireland. Yeah.
So, you know, that game wasn't replayed. And, you know, I know France maybe wish they never came to the World Cup in South Africa, considering what happened.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's just how it is. And yeah, if we get a replay, so be it. But you know, if it doesn't match up to what happened in Polokwane against Senegal 4 years ago, that I don't see that happening at all.
You know, it's interesting actually when we talk about VAR and everything. You know, I think that is one thing I was thinking of on Sunday. You know, I think this is qualifiers, right? And CAF has VAR for the semi-final of the CAF Champions League. You know, when Chiefs was playing Wydad Casablanca, they had VAR in Casablanca. They had VAR here at FNB, and the semi-final where Sanda, what's this, Al Ahly was playing Esperance, there was also VAR. So there are measures put in place for the club competition. You know, I think each country that is participating in the qualifiers should at least have those type of facilities at one of their stadiums in their country. If you don't have the facilities at your country, then you must go to the closest neighboring country that has those facilities, so that we can play it on such a level playing field. Because if I think about it, all the confederations has VAR in place. I think, you know, you look at South America has it in place. You know, North America has it in place. Europe has it in place. Even though I know Portugal were robbed in the first game against Serbia, but I don't know what happened. I can't remember what actually happened there that they didn't see that goal over the line. But there's so much money at stake, you know, and so much pride at stake. You know, I think this is something in Africa that we should definitely be fixing. In the match where DRC was playing Benin, DRC got a dubious penalty as well. Literally, people were looking around trying to figure out what was the decision made, you know. Mm-hmm. And DRC needed to win as well to go qualify. You see, it's in matches where the one needs to win to qualify. You know what I mean? It's not even in the match where nothing needs to happen. And that in both matches, the team that benefited needed something to happen. So what do you think, you know, in terms of CAF and FIFA, in terms of not having the VAR in place?
Yeah, it's very difficult. I mean, you know, speaking as a South African, it's very easy because we've got world-class infrastructure and we've been helped by the World Cup and we've got great funding, we've got a great local league and the money is there. But then you look at a game in Niger or you look at a game in Djibouti and you think to yourself, will there be, you know, is it realistic that VAR will be implemented there? You know, the cost behind VAR, because, you know, you need the live broadcast, you know, you need extra match officials. I mean, an African continent is so huge. I mean, we can't really compare ourselves to the rest of, you know, the world. I mean, you know, South America only has a few countries and they all compete in the same pool. You know, it's different strokes for different folks. And yeah, but still, you know, maybe then we break it down and say for key games like we had South Africa, Ghana, like we had today with Nigeria, Cape Verde and Algeria, Burkina Faso, maybe their VAR should be implemented, because I think it's easier also in those countries, and you know there's a hell of a lot at stake. You know, one goal can make a huge difference. We saw the Serbia Portugal game, you know, Mitrovic's goal in the last minute. What impact that has, and you know, can you imagine a World Cup without Cristiano Ronaldo? Like you mentioned, he had a goal disallowed that crossed the line, and what impact that would have had in the things. But that's just the margins of football. But obviously, CAF will be looking at all of this and hopefully they can come to a solution, because in the end of the day, you want the best teams qualifying, not just the best teams qualifying, but you want them qualifying correctly and in the correct fashion, because otherwise, you know, it's just hope lost, I feel.
No, definitely. Nick, I think, what do you think in terms of, you know, the whole situation around VAR and the fairness and so on and so forth?
Yeah, I mean, I went to a referee's sort of, not a course, they come to speak to Amatux and the staff and the players. And at the beginning of the season, Victor Tlongwane, the referee in the PSL, and he had just sort of spoke to us about VAR, and there is a plan from SAFA's side and the PSL side, but that plan's like 3 to 4 years, if I'm not mistaken, might be even longer, because the cost implication is really, really big. And right now it's not viable for even the PSL to go that route. So I do think I do echo sort of the sentiments of AB. You know, you can imagine there's quite a few countries there that can probably not even pay their players, let alone get a VAR system in place at their national stadium. So yeah, I do think you know, if there is a game of that is going to count, you know, a game like Ghana and South Africa would be a true example of that. And you would like to think that we could have something in place, but it is a very difficult one, because you've got a country now that is knocked out of the World Cup, essentially, where we probably rightly, so if we don't concede that goal, we go through to the next round. You know, the incorrect decision was made, regardless of performance, regardless of, you know, Ghana maybe playing well. Where does Bafana pick themselves up from this? Because we're not going to another AFCON for at least another two tournaments, or at least another, we're not going to the next one. The next World Cup we can only go to is in the USA, and Mexico and Canada. It's bitter. It's a very bitter pill to swallow. I'm just very interested to see, and I don't know, AB, if you have any idea how seriously SAFA are taking this. You know, there's been a lot of talk in the last 2 days. I don't know if you've spoken to anyone, but how serious is the claim that Danny Jordan is going, you know, directly to FIFA? He's having the conversations that need to be had.
Look, I think the fact that FIFA have acknowledged the claim and the story has reached foreign media, which it has, I think that would put pressure on FIFA to, you know, to make not just a statement, but to investigate. And in the end of the day, if they find that something was wrong, maybe they will take action. Yeah. But at the end of the day, we still have to go back to Ghana and win, or draw at least. So I think they're taking it seriously. I think they take any of these type of things seriously. And if there's enough evidence, then it will go to the next step. But I just don't think we should pin our hopes on that. Maybe it helps that the CAF president is from South Africa. I mean, Patrice Motsepe seems to have a really good relationship with everyone at FIFA. Maybe he can whisper or drop a WhatsApp message. everything is encrypted these days.
Listen, FIFA corrupt, as we know. So, you know, something might happen. We don't know. And it might work in our favor.
look, I'll be smiling. I mean, I wouldn't mind going to Qatar next year and watching with Bafana, to be honest. Nah. So I think we'll find out more in the next few weeks. But I think they've got time because the playoffs are only, you know, next year.
Yeah.
Or, you know, closer to the World Cup. They've got a bit of time. Let's wait and see. I'm not hoping for it. I'm not convinced that it will happen.
But I think also, like, speaking about that VAR situation, you know, just to show you, like, Ghana's situation in terms of the broadcast, there's only one angle of that actual incident, if you've noticed. Like, the second angle is a zoomed in version of what you can see on the big screen. So it's obviously a very, very limited broadcast that they even had at that stadium. So, I mean, we play a game here in South Africa and SuperSport have cameras all over the stadium and you can see everything from every angle. I mean, the Premier League is a great example. You can see anything from any angle. But, you know, the evidence that they've got right now is more than likely what we've seen. And what I worry about is you can't actually see the guy, Daruk's hands.
Arms.
You can't see what he's actually doing because the Ghana player's back is to him. And for me, I wish there was another angle because that would, you know, be wholehearted evidence for us. But yeah, regardless of that, you know, Bafana are on the up. You know, I hope we stick with Bruce. You know, I don't think there's anyone calling for his head. Not that I've seen, at least. And hopefully we can, you know, really kick on. And, you know, I'd like to give him an opportunity to restructure a whole sort of national system, you know, right up from the youth ages coming up, you know, what he thinks is necessary for a national team player eventually when they reach the senior level. Because we haven't really had a plan in the last 10, 15 years, as I'm sure you guys can agree.
No, definitely, definitely. I think he is the right man to definitely take us forward. I just think that the only thing that's counting against him is his age. He's in his late 60s. I think he's 69 or 70 or almost 70. But I think he should definitely be given another you know, 3-4 years or so, and let's see what he can do in that time. And I think he would have transformed our system. He's got good ideas, and also I think he's firm in his beliefs, which is what I like about him. You know, when he picks certain players and, you know, doesn't pick players of a certain age, I think that shows a person who's clear in his what he wants. And also for longevity purposes, you know, I mean, these players that are 32 won't be there for the next, you know, qualifiers or next World Cups and so on and so forth. So I think it does help us going forward. But just in terms of the African qualifiers in general, you know, I think this is probably going to be I think Europe has 13 slots, guys. Africa has 5 slots. These two continents have similar amount of countries on each continent. Europe has about 56, I think, countries. We have about 53, 54 countries. But we get 5 slots, they get 13 slots. African countries need to go to a playoffs. And right now, actually, Algeria just drew against Burkina Faso, so they've qualified. They drew 2-2. So they've qualified. If Burkina Faso won that match, they were going to qualify. So then there's a big game happening as well tonight with Ivory Coast and Cameroon, separated by 1 point, similar to what we're talking about. There's no VAR in that game. But look at all these teams I'm talking about, you know what I mean? A Cameroon missing out, potentially. A South African missing out, you know what I mean? You know, there's teams which I feel could beat certain European teams that have gone into these playoffs. Yes, Italy is in the playoffs. Portugal is in the playoffs. But these teams play against the San Marino, against Liechtenstein, against the Luxembourg, against countries that, honestly, guys, Ethiopia would beat these countries. You know what I mean? you know, Cape Verde is actually a good country. You know, African countries need to go through playoffs to make the qualifiers, because Ethiopia had to beat Lesotho to make our group. You know what I mean? So Lesotho wasn't even the qualifiers because they lost to Ethiopia. But you get European countries playing against minnows, basically, plumbers, you know, and 10-0 score lines for England and so on and so forth. What do you think about that, AB? I think, 13 versus 5.
Yeah, I think that question is 50-fold. You know, I mean, to be fair, Algeria also play against Djibouti, who got a hammering. I think they conceded 30 goals in the group stages. So yep. They basically, maybe that's a good game between them and San Marino, to be honest.
fair.
But yeah, the margin for error is just so much smaller on the African continent. You think of massive nations who missed out on World Cup qualification. I mean, Egypt dominated African football for 15 years or so. And during that time, they didn't qualify for one World Cup, which is actually, it's unbelievable. I don't think Abu Treka played in a World Cup, and he's considered largely the best African player or player to spend his whole career on the African continent or never play in Europe for that matter. But, you know, again, then, you know, the quality you have in Europe, it's spread around much more. And I think you can play more qualifiers in Europe and qualify directly because, you know, that geographically it makes sense because you can get from point A to B much quicker. With you traveling from Algeria to South Africa, or I mean, even South Africa to Ghana this past week, we've heard of bus rides and multiple flights, and that's just the norm. So I think there's a lot of factors to it, and it doesn't help when Africa goes to the World Cup and all the teams are eliminated in the group stages. So you have to prove yourself on the highest stage. Yes, we have at youth tournaments in past, you know, Nigeria have done really well in under 17 and under 20 tournaments. That doesn't really count for anything on the biggest stage. So yeah, I would love to see more African nations. And I think they've tried to vouch for that over the years. But, you know, like I said, we have to prove ourselves on the biggest stage. And yes, Algeria are unbeaten now in 33 games after the draw against Burkina Faso. You know, if they were in Europe, it would have been a massive story. I mean, Italy also were, I think, 34 or whatever games unbeaten. Yeah. So, yeah, I think the world does look at Africa in a different way. But I think the players that are coming through the system now, you know, we've got the world's best players are from the African continent. A lot of the world's best players. You know, Mohamed Salah is largely thought about to be the most informed player the last month or two in the world, in world football. And, you know, he's from Egypt. So I think the world is starting to take notice. That's not saying Africa has not had great players in the past. We've always produced amazing players, but I think the talent is just getting more and more, and the world will start to take notice. And, you know, if we can have an African nation going as far as the semi-finals next year, then, you know, maybe we can, on the back of that, push for 6-7 teams at the next World Cup, especially if they're going to expand it. So, yeah.
And I think also, I think that you've hit the nail on the head, and I think that's a simple answer. You know, how they seed Champions League teams, or how they sort of allow teams from different nations to enter.
Yeah.
So we got four in the Premier League, for example, but it's based on your coefficient. And I think they've got some similar calculation. And I think we would have had a good chance of getting six teams if Ghana got to a semi-final in 2010. Because who knows, maybe they even make a final after that. You know, obviously hard done by there by Luis Suarez. But, you know, they need to go on, and, you know, if you get two teams in the quarterfinals and then one in a semi-final, then you've got a good, you know, CAF has a good leg to stand on to say, listen, hey, you know, we're mixing it with the best here. We're knocking out your European teams, your South American teams. Give us another two slots or whatever it is. So I think it's just purely based on performance, Selo, if I'm very honest with you. And we've never been really that consistent. We've always had great teams, but like we've had teams that have done well one year. Like, for example, Senegal were the hot topic in 2002, and Senegal really didn't feature for the next couple of tournaments until sort of recently, where they've in the last sort of like 5-6 years, they've, you know, you've heard about them again. So I think there has been that inconsistency within South African, or within African football. South Africa is a great example as well. You know, 98 World Cup, 2002 World Cup, and boom, we haven't qualified for a World Cup since. You know, we host our own World Cup, but we haven't qualified for a World Cup. That's the reality. Yeah. So I think it's just that sort of consistency. I mean, the European nations consistently, you see the same teams all the time, barring and Italy in the last World Cup, you know, potentially again in this World Cup if they don't qualify. You know, you do get the odd sort of story where one or two nations don't qualify. But in general, Europe are quite consistent, as well as South America in that sense.
No, definitely. I think no one disputes the quality of the teams that qualify. I think they just dispute the quality of their opponents in those, some of their groups.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think
fair enough.
They're the San Marinos, but definitely, yeah, Europe has consistently shown that, you'll always get a semi-finalist or a finalist from that continent. But I think with the next World Cup, they're looking to increase it to they're increasing it to 48, from 32. So Africa should.
That's a lot of teams, eh?
Sure. Yeah, out of that.
How long is that tournament going to be?
I think they're still going to try and squeeze it into the same amount of time, 32 days. But that 16 team extra allocation, Africa should definitely get a decent chunk out of that, and obviously Europe will also get an increase. But definitely, I would like Africa to at least have 10 slots. You know, I think even eight of the if you're giving 16 more. You give the other 16, you get 5, and then you get 11 to spread across. Maybe Asia gets 2 more, 3 more. You know, South America could get an automatic qualifier because the number 5 has to go to playoff. You know, but I'm sure they'll try to figure it out in the best way possible. You know, but yeah, just in terms of the African playoffs, which obviously will be taking place in March. What are your initial thoughts, AB, in terms of that? Do you think there could be some surprises? Obviously, I know it's a seeding system based on the African rankings, where I think Senegal is number 1 in Africa, and then Algeria is number 2 or 3, and then obviously I think even Tunisia is actually in the top 5 as well.
Yeah, so I think the top teams are Tunisia, Morocco, Algeria, and Senegal currently. So I think I don't really predict much surprises, to be honest. I think looking at the teams, I know Algeria and Nigeria, they squeezed past into the playoffs today. And I mean, Nigeria lost to Central African Republic, which was a massive shocker last month. But, you know, those things happen in the qualifiers. But I think of it two legs. You look at Algeria, Nigeria, Morocco. I just want our best teams to go in the end of the day. I've always liked a bit of a shock. I think of Togo in 2006. But I'd like our best teams to go, the highest quality players, so that we can go and perform on the highest stage. So I'd love to see Algeria, Nigeria, Morocco, you know, teams with players, jam-packed, full of players that play in the Serie A, in the Premier League, in La Liga. And I think then, you know, that's when we might see an African team finally reaching the final four of a World Cup. So yeah, I'm a bit, you know, I like the fantasy, and I like the, you know, the romanticism about football and the, you know, underdog story. But at the end of the day, I want the best teams to compete at the World Cup. And for me, that means no shocks. So deep down, I'm hoping for no shock. Obviously, if South Africa win the playoffs, then I would have maybe said something different. But yeah. I would love to see the best teams there. So that is Algeria, Nigeria, Morocco, Senegal. You know, those four, I think if we've got those four going to the World Cup.
But we need Ivory Coast there as well.
You mentioned Egypt, eh?
I don't even know about Egypt. You know, I look at their team and I think, are they as strong as they used to be? You know, you've got Mohamed Salah, but who?
Yeah. You got El Ghazi from
really convinced.
El Ghazi from Aston Villa. El Ghazi from Aston Villa, I think, and that guy that the right back who used to play for Hull City is also, I think.
Al-Mohammadi, that guy's been there forever. Steve Bruce's love child. That guy gets signed wherever Steve Bruce goes.
Isn't it Trezeguet,
you're right. Trezeguet, who takes the penalties for Aston Villa. That's the guy, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but for me, they're not better than what Algeria have. You know, Algeria's got Riyad Mahrez to start off with. Hmm. You know, Islam Slimani is scoring a lot of goals now. I mean,
Benrahma.
I mean, West Ham are doing amazingly. Ivory Coast have Luis Sebastian Haller. He's been amazing in the Champions League. You've got Nigeria, who are stacked. Osimhen, Iheanacho. I mean, Ndidi. They probably on paper got the best team. Morocco have got Ziyech and Hakimi. You know, a lot of other guys that I can't even think of right now. So for me, and Senegal, everyone knows their quality. They've got the best goalkeeper, Edouard Mendy, and they've got Sadio Mane. So for me, if those five teams are in Qatar next year, I'm quite confident that at least two of them can reach the quarterfinals. Just depending, of course, on which group they get.
Yeah,
because that does play a big part. But, you know, in the end of the day, I want our best teams to go over. And I really don't want any shocks, because I just feel that they will go there and not perform like we hope African teams will.
No, definitely. I completely agree. Yeah, I guess the cream will rise to the top, you know. But yeah, it'll be tough, especially for teams like a DRC and a Mali in the qualifiers.
So AB, sorry, just to if we did qualify, we would have been unseeded based on our ranking? Is that correct?
Yeah, so we would have probably gotten Algeria just to soften the blow. But you never know. I mean, no one gave South Africa a chance against Egypt at AFCON. You know, I know Egypt, maybe they were a bit underwhelming in the tournament. I remember against Zimbabwe in the opening game, they weren't, you know, that convincing. But
who did we get knocked out? We actually lost the next game.
Nigeria.
The semi-final. Was that the semi-final or the quarter-final?
Quarterfinal. Yeah, we lost to Nigeria. Probably should have won that game.
Yeah, I also thought so. I remember that clearly. Yeah, we should have won that game.
Yeah, but you just never know in these qualifiers. I mean, how sad would it be if Portugal and Italy don't make it to the World Cup?
Yeah.
But in the end of the day, football isn't won on paper. You know,
true.
I know it's a cliche, but it's not won on paper. It's won on the pitch. And if those teams don't pitch on the day, then they're not going to go to the World Cup. It's as easy as that.
No, definitely. I couldn't agree more. Something just to touch on, obviously, I think that maybe people have actually missed of late. Maybe they didn't see what's going on. You know, there's been a CAF Women's Champions League going on in Egypt, where there's been 8 teams from 8 regions in Africa that have been participating. And Mamelodi Sundowns ladies have made it to the final, which will be played on Friday. They'll be playing a team from, guess where, from Ghana. So they'll be playing a Ghanaian team in the final. So yeah, they beat a team from Equatorial Guinea yesterday on penalties, 5-4 on penalties. So yeah, I don't know if you've been keeping a tab on what's been going on, AB, but what do you think of Mamelodi Sundowns ladies reaching the CAF Women's Champions League final?
I mean, are people sick of Sundowns winning things?
Hey man, listen, we can't be sick of them in the women's game. You know what I mean? I think that's one part we can't be sick of them. We have to be sick of them in the men's game only.
Just the name Mamelodi Sundowns, Jeepers, they are dominating football. Eh? It's unbelievable. Yeah. Not just the men's game in South Africa, but the women's game, they just absolutely dominate. It's amazing, yeah. And it's great to see them flying the flag on the African continent. Obviously, the women's game, not just in football and soccer, but I think across board in rugby and cricket as well. It's really growing across the globe and becoming more and more professional, which is great to see. And obviously, Sundowns, the ladies team, have struggled for goals in this tournament so far. But at the end of the day, it's about edging past the tournaments, and titles are won on the fence. So yeah, hopefully they can give a good account of themselves on Friday and get one back over a Ghanaian team. But yeah, I think it's just great to see, and you know, kudos to Sundowns for investing a lot of time and money into the women's game. Obviously, our Banyana players are doing really well overseas. You know, you think of Khatlana, Atletico Madrid. I mean, in the men's game, we don't even have, I think, one player performing in the top 5 leagues in Europe. But, you know, in the women's game, we've got a lot doing really well at the highest level. And Khatlana's playing for one of the biggest clubs in the world, for Atletico Madrid's women's team. So I think we can learn a lot. The men can learn a lot from what the women have done right. Obviously, they also qualified for a World Cup recently in France. So, yeah, just all the best to them for Friday, and hopefully they can win the cup and you know, follow in the men's footsteps. You know, obviously they won in Egypt 2016. So yeah, let's all the best to them. I think they can bring the trophy home.
No, that's true. That's true. I just want to greet some people in the comments here. Warren Pereira, Jason Sergil, who's Nick's analyst, or is he analyst or assistant coach? What is he?
But of both. He's also the academy manager at Tux.
Okay.
Yeah. He's a jack of all trades.
And then we've got someone new in the comments here, LG. How's it going? And then we've got Claudio Barreiro here. I don't know who this guy is. He's some Portuguese guy, I think. Give the ladies the men's budget. Okay, I don't want to go into all of those politics, but I think it is commendable in terms of, I think the fact that actually CAF have actually created this tournament. I think first and foremost, I think kudos to them for creating the tournament. Whatever structure that they've actually created for this tournament, you know what I mean? I think it's a good step, you know, going forward. I think they said not for.
Can I play devil's advocate before you carry on there? Who's just been announced as the CAF president?
Patrice Motsepe.
And this tournament is it's the first one, if I'm not mistaken, AB?
Correct.
Inaugural tournament?
Correct, yeah.
I don't know. Things are lining up here for his team to win the tournament. So, as soon as he comes in and he approves the CAF Champions League for women and his team are in the final, I'm just saying.
That could be true. I don't know. I don't know, obviously, how long they had this in the works.
Listen. He's got a good mind. He's got a good mind. He says, I want to bring success to my team, you know, promote women's football on the continent. And why don't I do it both at the same time. And he's done it, what, within 12 months?
That's actually fair. And I wouldn't be surprised if, I don't know if they've mentioned this, but it would make sense if a FIFA Club World Cup, the women's one runs parallel with the men's. So same tournament, men and women at the same place for Club World Cup, for instance. And because I know there's a Copa Libertadores for women in South America. There's Champions League, UEFA Champions League. I'm sure Asia should be having something or should be promoted to have something. And then obviously North America can do something there with the US and Mexico, which do have competitive teams. You know, I think it would be something to actually boost the nature of women's sports in terms of actually being at a similar tournament as men at the same time. That'll actually boost them. But I think, as I said, it's let's commend CAF for actually doing this. Eight teams. But as I was saying, is that I think it's from the 2022 to 2023 season for CAF, for the men's side. If you don't have a women's team, you can't enter the men's tournament. So you can't enter the men's tournament if you don't have a women's team. So Kaizer Chiefs and Orlando Pirates need to wake up. Those are the two teams that I can immediately think of in South Africa that need to create a women's team.
Yeah, I mean, Manchester United were also quite slow on the women's football side of things.
Definitely.
So, yeah, could probably draw a few parallels there. But I think, you know, the women's game is just exploding at the moment. And I wouldn't say, you know, they should start having curtain raisers, because curtain raisers is the wrong word to use, because I don't want to undermine the women's game. But, you know, you see that happening in cricket. You know, we saw the 100, which was a new format that was implemented in England, and you had the women playing before the men, you know, the same teams. And the crowd could come in for both games and watch both and appreciate both. And, you know, they can be standalone fixtures, but maybe in the beginning phase, maybe that's a way to go about it. I've said in the past that, you know, the Disky Challenge, the reserve team should also be a curtain raiser. Mm. You know, it's better for me having, you know, at least fans that are coming to a game, and, you know, there'll be spillage over of fans coming a bit earlier than to watch that game than have it played in front of no one. And yes, the multi-choice Disky Challenge and those competitions, they've drawn a crowd, but there's definitely better ways to do it and to, you know, just giving the women's game a bit more exposure. That's just going to grow the game and, a bit more budget. And, you know, 10 years ago, we wouldn't have thought that it would be as big as it is now. And just look what happened, you know, a bit of love and care and a bit of money thrown behind it. And, you know, we've starting to reap the rewards, which is just terrific to see.
AB, you know what's quite funny with regards to what you say, the MDC or DDC being curtain raiser. I'm not too sure if you're aware, and I don't know if that's changed, but a couple of years ago, I was doing something for our sort of drive to get fans to the stadiums, you know, for Amatux and for our varsity team. But the PSL have a rule, and I'm not too sure if that's changed, and that spills down into the NFD or the GLAAD Africa Championship, that a match cannot take place, I think, 4 hours before the kickoff of another match. So that would just make that situation null and void. And, you know, just speaking to my dad back in the day when he used to watch the old NSL, when, you know, you had your Cape Town Cities and your Germiston Cities and Durban Uniteds and all those, like, old historic teams, and then your Sundowns and Pirates and Chiefs, they started forming part of that. You know, you would have the under-9 teams, the Colts, playing a friend or playing their curtain raiser before, or it was the under-15s playing a curtain raiser two hours before, and, you know, you would get a full stadium watching the lighties all the way through. And I don't know if you, as a journalist, maybe do some digging there, but I don't know why, you know, that they use the condition of the pitch as a reason. But, you know, we don't have full stadiums in our country, and, you know, I think we should be trying to do everything possible to make that a reality. And I think that would be a great way. You know, if you can find a pitch in a stadium that can hold a load of three matches, one ladies match, one youth match, and a PSL match at the in one day, like the FNB, for example, or a smaller stadium, you look at Bidvest Stadium. You know, good conditions, fields that are in good condition. Look at the stadium at Tux. You know, that's probably, for me, I'm a bit biased, but probably the best pitch in the country. Like, honestly, no, the best pitch in the country. Like, AB, you were there the other day. The amount of load that pitch has taken, rugby, football, you know, Sundowns ladies have played a few games there. And it still, you know, maintains. There's fields in South Africa where you can have 3-4 games on a day. And, you know, you create a spectacle. You create a sort of product that you can sell.
Yeah, I just don't think we're looking for solutions. I mean, you're probably spot on in the fact that, you know, PSL must have been brought up in meetings gone by, and it's a reason that they don't do it. But, you know, we see it in rugby. I know when it's like a Currie Cup final, the under-19 final and the 21 final, and the big final is on the same day at the same field. I know rugby is different because, you know, the pitch, you know, it's not, the ball's not on the ground all the time.
Yeah.
In football, you need a more smoother surface, but there's definitely ways around it. I mean, Sundowns play soccer at a rugby stadium in of the day, and, you know, Pitso, I know in the past, has complained about, you know, them playing on the rugby field, but they still went on and scored loads of goals and won a lot of games there. So if it's just used for soccer purposes, and, you know, there's definitely ways around this. I think it's just easy to come up with excuses.
Yeah, easier than that. Yeah, than finding solutions.
Yeah, no, 100%. So there's definitely ways we can try and get more exposure, be it on youth football or on the women's game. Yes, there's been a lot of broadcast elements, and kudos to SuperSport for pumping that type of money into it. But, you know, we need fans back at the stadium, and I think that's definitely going to come to the forefront after, you know, COVID completely dies down. But obviously that's just a discussion for another day. But yeah, I think there's definitely ways to do this and to get even more eyes on, you know, all levels of football.
No, yeah. Definitely. No, definitely. I definitely agree. Just to wrap up, any final thoughts? I'm going to start with yourself, Nick, and then go to Coach AB.
Yeah, I mean, it's always good talking about our national team. Not so good in moments when we've just been knocked out of the World Cup, because essentially we were playing in the World Cup. Obviously, it's not the final stage of the World Cup, but we've been knocked out of the World Cup. It's sad, but it is, you know, good to see the progress that we are making. And unfortunately, we're always in this sort of position, you know, it's sort of stuck between a rock and a hard place. Like, we can see the improvement, but we still haven't qualified, you know. So I can understand why people are frustrated. You know, maybe something comes of this protest / complaint. I'm not too sure what you call it. But hopefully we can find some, you know, clarity sooner rather than later, because you don't want it to drag on until just before March, and we're still hoping that FIFA say, hey, you're going to get a replay. Let's put us out of our misery, or you know, give us a second chance. Hopefully Bruce can make a plan. But to you, AB, you know, we've, I think, interacted on social media for the last couple of years. It's good to see your work, you know, your passion for the game, especially the local game. And I need to get you an Amatuck shirt, so next time you come to the stadium, I don't want to see you in a Cape Town Spurs shirt.
I've actually got an Amatuck shirt, but it's too small for me. I think they gave me an extra small few years.
Really?
I really appreciate the new one.
Yeah,
guys, thanks for having me on the show. Obviously, looking forward to a massive Arsenal win on the weekend.
Claudio would like that.
I know Claudio is a Liverpool supporter, so I thought I'll just end the show on that note. But yeah, thanks for having me, Cello, Nick. Great chatting to you guys. You know, hopefully Bafana get the rub of the green. But, you know, even if we don't, there's a lot to build on and a lot to look forward to.
Okay, no, great, man. Thanks a lot, AB. Thanks for coming on to the show. Nick, thanks a lot for joining as well. So the Premier League is back this weekend. So no international break for 4 months, which people I'm excited about. And let's see what Nick's new coach can do at Newcastle. And yeah, let's see if Arsenal can actually continue their run of form. And as can we say upset Liverpool? Yeah, an upset Liverpool. You know what I mean?
An upset
Liverpool. You know what I mean? I would actually like to see that because Claudio will have a meltdown. But yeah, thanks for everyone who tuned in this evening. Remember to like, subscribe, to the channel. You know, follow us on our social media pages, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and also join our Discord channel. So we've got a Discord channel, where we can, where we throw in some banter about, what's going on in the world of football. But yeah, join us on, Thursday for the next show, guys. Thanks a lot. Cheers.
Cheers.